Mike, you want to get started? Is that okay if I?
No, just thank you everybody for kind of showing up today. As Parker said, it's a pretty good presentation today. A couple months worth of stuff. So yeah, thank you again.
Great, thank you. So this is our seventh meeting. I might put folks on mute here. To get some feedback.
Who wants to do the past 70? Because that's the only thing.
All right, so this is our seventh advisory committee meeting. As we indicated, the meeting is being recorded and will be posted on the CROG website. So it will be publicly available following today's presentation. So just a quick review on what we want to cover today. Generally been busy. As always, we've kind of structured this. We go through each of the individual municipalities. We'll start off just general project updates, taking a look at where we stand in the 12-mile gap, more or less, and then we'll go start in Bloomfield. We've had some good developments there in the last 2 months or so, so we're in pretty good position. The big content for today is Griffin Line Rail with Trail Feasibility Memorandum. Presented some summary information, and we want to present that today and likely have some discussion around that later on how we think that might be able to fit, and that is in draft form still. And then wrap up with discussion on the Hartford screening results now that we had some clarity on how Griffin Line may or may work. We have entered in the scores of the rest of the other corridors that we're looking for, and then just talk about next steps and open up for discussion. And again, as a reminder, public comment is at the end of the meeting, so any folks outside of the advisory committee that would like to speak can do so at the end of the meeting. Just want to briefly review the project schedule. So initially we had anticipated a April end to this. I will say I think you'll see that Griffin Line row down there below. We kind of detoured a little bit to get to that, get that deliverable in, a little bit delayed on the scoping. As we might recall, in December we had our site visit right before Thanksgiving week, so we had a busy holiday month, and then going into January getting that report draft finalized. So the big news there on the schedule is that we're pushing out probably 1 to 2 months into May, hopefully maybe June at the latest, but really trying to get this thing wrapped up. We're here in February, and then the tasks ahead for us as a group. We have one more advisory committee meeting scheduled before the kind of the last push to the municipal meetings, councils, or the any of the committees that are going to be hearing, kind of approving the plan. We do have a newsletter, so I think there's been a lot of developments that you'll see in this meeting. Once we kind of talk those through as a group, we'll be pushing out a newsletter here in the next month or so. And we do have a final set of public meetings, and we also have three more pop-ups scoped. I think we can talk about those at the end. Initially, the thought potentially is now we're figuring out a little bit more where this route could go, specifically for the Hartford Griffin Line area. There might be some discussion on how those pop-ups get spent in terms of maybe some of the neighborhood groups that are clearly stakeholders into this trail might warrant a direct meeting. Here's a very simple overview map with the four communities, Simsbury, Bloomfield, Hartford, East Hartford, and overall status. Simsbury has been complete as of last month in January, received the approvals from town council up at Simsbury prior to the new year. In January, it received the necessary approvals from CROG and the relevant committees there. So if you're interested to see that report is available, and it's my understanding that they are pushing ahead with trying to get grant funding aligned up. Circling back to East Hartford, that's been a little bit quiet in the last several months. Where that stands, we have a selected alignment. We had several meetings with the mayor in East Hartford. We had a site visit back in the fall, and the preferred alignment was selected by the mayor and town staff in fall of 2023. Quick summary, that's essentially a off-road alignment with as many grade separated crossings as possible in the Silver Lane area. We're not going to really talk about that today, but if you want for reference, it was talked really in detail on the October 25th presentation, or the 5th advisory committee, and it was alternative C7 was the one that was chosen as a preferred alternative. And that really leaves the bulk of today's presentation. We're going to cover Bloomfield just last week. Just last week up in Bloomfield, the Trails Committee met on Friday and selected a preferred alignment. So, Phil, I know we didn't orchestrate this, but I hope you could spend a few minutes talking about kind of the developments there, just the same type of thing that you did with the committee last week and kind of where we landed in a few slides.
The slides?
Yep.
Yeah, so okay.
Just in a few,
no problem.
Few moments. Same thing. The second topic for today, we'll talk about Griffin Line Rail with Trail. That memo, the draft, was completed in February 2024, and we have sent that out to several of you on the call and kind of the most directly impacted agencies. But we'll talk about some of the highlights today as succinctly as possible. And then finally, the screening for the section from Hartford to Bloomfield Center. We've always noted that we expect that the shortlist will be the Griffin Line, whatever the results of that memo was, plus the next best alternative. So we'll see how those stack up and where we're headed with the next best alternative for that section. Just really quick, as I noted, this is just a screenshot of the cover for the Town of Simsbury Recommendation Report. This is kind of a standalone document. This has been finalized. And again, just reiterating, the schedule as suggested in the report was designed 2024, maybe to 2026, and then construction 27 to 28 over two seasons. I'll actually open up to the town. I don't know if there's been any developments that they'd like to share to the group since, but.
Good morning. Thank you. We're really pleased with the final report, and we're going to include it in our Deep Trails grant that's coming up, along with probably everyone else. And we're hoping to find some money to start the design and get it going. Construction 2027, 2028 would be amazing. We'll see what happens with the design phase. But thanks so much for all of the efforts, and we really appreciate it here.
Great. Thank you. So with that, I'll shift over to Phil. If you want to just give a brief highlight of kind of what the happenings been in Bloomfield and where we landed last week.
Sure, I could do that. Yeah, no problem. As Parker mentioned, we had a meeting with the Trails Committee in Bloomfield, and that's a committee that's chaired by a town councilor and includes the mayor, includes another town councilor, and four or five additional members. So it's a good group that we have had preliminary discussions with prior to that as a subcommittee in a sense, but we were finally able to meet with the full committee. It was a special meeting, wasn't part of the regularly scheduled monthly meetings, but the primary goal for the meeting was to present the various the shortlist of alternatives and see if the committee was comfortable kind of narrowing down to a preferred alternative. So we started the meeting just reminding them where we were at initially back last summer, 2023, where we had much larger variety of different route options. We kind of presented them. We have split generally the town into a north half, which is north of Wittenberry or north of the downtown area, and a south half. So we had three options, including the Griffin Line and the north area. And then we had five or six options in the central or south part of Bloomfield back last summer. Next slide. And you can see how those are scored. And as we went through the screening process and also additional meetings, getting additional input from town staff and from others, our shortlist of alternatives was narrowed down to, in essence, two in the north half of town and two in the south half with some spurs. Because we had a reduced number of routes to evaluate, we did the screening process. We revised the screening process simply because there was only comparing two relative to each other rather than three or even up to six. Also, some of the routing alignments had shifted in a few spots as well. So anyhow, in relooking at the scoring, in the north half, you could see there was the Griffin line in orange, and then we had a route that used kind of a mix of on-street routes or side paths, shared use paths adjacent to roadways, and also going adjacent to one of the reservoirs. So that's the one shown in blue. And that blue route, as you can see, the bottom, you know, 3/4 mile or so did in fact use the Griffin line as well. So clearly the two options came together. Scoring was, you know, relatively similar. But as the committee, the trail committee, as we reviewed these and discussed these in more detail, you know, as the discussions have been ongoing in the city of Hartford as part of this project with the Connecticut DOT Office of Rail, and there seems to be, you know, somewhat of an opening from Connecticut DOT for allowing a rail with trail configuration. Based on that, and then based on some of the other uncertainties with having a route running through a deep property next to the reservoir and some of the environmental issues there, the trail committee was interested in the Griffin line as the preferred alternative, really from end to end here, not just that southern portion that you're looking at, with that clearly would be needed for both the options. So, you know, that is reinforced by the scoring as well, but, you know, the scoring being relatively close here, that wasn't the primary deciding factor. There was a lot of other qualitative issues as well. So with the north half, that was the preferred alternative, remaining on the Griffin line, really from end to end for the north half. In the central or the southern portion, you could see the dividing line between the two areas is really at the crossing of the Griffin line and 178 or Park Ave. So everything below that, we had two options. Well, there was two and a half options in a sense. There was the south option one, which was split, you know, one running south to the University of Hartford area through the or around the Copaco Shopping Center, and then a spur that went out towards the Madianuk Natural Area Preserve, and then continuing on to connect to Hartford via the riverfront path. And then, of course, the second option was continuing along the Griffin line. So you could see how the score is evaluated here. The routes away from the Griffin line scored a little bit higher, but clearly the two spurs had, you know, nearly identical scores. And in discussions with the trail committee, the preference was really to, you know, the purple route was where people were leaning, or which is currently the trail committee's preferred alternative, except with the caveat that understanding that there is certainly a decent chance that City of Hartford is looking at the Griffin line and connecting to University of Hartford and beyond, given that that is a likely scenario coming out of the City of Hartford, that the trail committee and their preferred alternative would defer to that. And that the primary route for the East Coast Greenway could follow the S1, the teal color line, but that there still is a lot of interest in having the purple S1 alt route as being a link to certainly to the neighborhoods that are east, east of where the two lines split, and then potentially further beyond. And the town of Bloomfield already has a grant application and funding to build portions of the line that's shown in purple along an old trolley alignment and connecting to Rockwell Park, which has funding for its redesign and reconstruction at some point in the near future as well. So that's where we're at in Bloomfield, with the preferred alternative being the purple route, but understanding that the East Coast Greenway route may in fact utilize the S1 connection to Copaco and beyond to UHART.
Thank you, Bill. So just to clarify too, I think just to reiterate, the preferred alternative from last week's meeting is to use S1, the teal or purple, and not the yellow line in this area for the reasons stated.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The Griffin line is the preferred alternative only north of the Park Ave crossing.
Yeah.
South of Park Ave crossing, besides the scoring, there, you know, a big part of why that scoring is lower, there's a lot of environmental challenges south of Cottage Grove Road, and just crossing Cottage Grove Road itself is a real challenge. Would be the need for a lot of coordination with Connecticut DOT to put in a signal or potentially even a grade separated overpass, which of course would be a very, very long ramp up and down to access the bridge, and very expensive.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
I also added this in if you want to.
Oh, sure. Yes. Yeah. Oh, thank you. And we have gone through and completed a cost estimate for all the various route options that we looked at earlier. You can see on the left, we have the N1 and the N2, and those circled are the preferred alternatives. You know, a lot of the costs were, you know, not so radically different between the various alternatives. You can see the N1, the reservoir route, was $8.7 million. The Griffin line was closer to $10 million in our estimates. And then in the south options, the kind of two primary ones we were looking at, the purple versus the teal being the Copaco route, was about $7 million. The purple, which is the preferred and ideal in theory, depending on what Hartford does, was $7.5 million. So cost-wise, they're really pretty analogous. And then the cost for the Griffin line, just the south portion, that shorter portion shown in yellow, the Griffin line ranged from $6 million up to almost $9 million, with that big difference being the potential need for a grade separated overpass for the trail over Cottage Grove.
Great. Thank you. So I want to jump into a little bit of the Griffin line study that we've been underway with in the last few months. So just want to highlight that this is draft form cover, but we'll kind of get into some of the thoughts behind the memo here in a little bit. But it's been submitted for review to DOT, City of Hartford, IQIL, the Greenway Alliance earlier in February. You know, while we review this, we just recognize that, you know, it's still in draft form and subject to change. So you'll see that kind of throughout the presentation, and certainly we'll open up the floor at the end of the presentation for discussion on these. Just a note, I think this was a little bit more certainly in depth than we initially anticipated on, you know, scoping this this memo. Actually, it's about 80 pages of the actual memo document, followed by 150 pages in appendices. So a lot of good information in there. We've discussed between the site visits and the discussions with all the various stakeholders, a lot of information. So we want to make sure that we document that for the memo to move forward here. So there's kind of all the information that's presented in the memo. Just as an overview for the study area for this this memo, we were specifically looking at Garden Street and Hartford, all the way up to Park Avenue in Bloomfield. we touched on it a little bit. Fuss and O'Neill did a study several years ago for the Griffin line throughout the town of Bloomfield. So we really use that as a basis for the screening analysis. There's a lot of good information there, and we kind of supplemented a little bit with the GIS resources that we had available. But for sure that the most complex part of this corridor is certainly down in this Hartford area, especially Albany Avenue to Garden Street. So we spent a lot of our time looking at the corridor in that section. Just a note as well, we split this corridor, generally speaking, at Plainfield Street. So we looked, there's an at-grade crossing at Plainfield Street is the only one in this extent. Well, that we really looked at, I guess. Garden Street has an at-grade crossing, and Route 218 has a at-grade crossing. But as you'll see, that we didn't really explore too much north of Toby Road for the reasons that Phil had noted. So we were generally splitting this corridor into two analysis zones, Plainfield Street to Toby Road, just at the Hartford-Bloomfield line, and then Plainfield Street to Garden Street. So you'll see that kind of reiterated throughout the summary here. There's a lot of good information on just existing conditions and constraints through the memo, but if I put it on one slide, this is really the takeaways from that chapter. Just going from south to north, from Hartford to Bloomfield, many considerations that we have documented, specifically on Homestead Avenue. There's a lot of adjacent buildings that are built right up into the rail line. So I'll show some photos and a little bit. But sometimes the offset from the rail center is 10 to 15 feet, not leaving too much space for a trail unless we're thinking about right-of-way acquisition, demolition of those buildings, or rail relocation. So something that we certainly want to be well aware. On the south side, certainly less constraints. There's 20 Sargent Street, which is at the corner of Sargent and Garden. And we think that there's a space on the site to allow for trail development. There's a driveway. The building's not built right up to the rail line. So while the right-of-way is constrained, we think there's some flexibility in there in terms of easements that we could do some minor site work to allow a trail to be built in that space. We do have two fairly narrow bridges. Generally speaking, the railroad's built in the center of the existing bridge spans. So it makes for a challenging environment to build a trail on either side, again, unless we're thinking about reconstructing these bridges or moving the railroad. So the smallest bridge on the corridor, Woodland Street Bridge, was well documented and discussed as a group. Fairly limited vertical clearance and also horizontal clearance. So in both dimensions, fairly small. Albany Ave is fairly narrow as well, a little bit wider, but again, the railroad's right through the center. So poses some challenges if you want to put a trail off to the side. And then further north of Albany Ave, certainly less constraints. But still something to consider. Eversource easement and transmission pylons, generally 20 feet or so off the rail center, that we would essentially have to be outside of that space. So coordination with Eversource would be critical through that area. But at the end of the day, still a DOT right-of-way. It's fairly significant width. We also have the University of Hartford campus. So something that was consideration, thinking about if we put a trail on that side of the tracks, access through that, how it relates to the campus, whatnot, and also needing easement even to get to the tracks to begin with, because there are significant environmental constraints north and south. We have some surface water, wetlands, floodplains. If you can imagine this area, Mark Twain Drive, if you know the area, there's like a little pond off the road there, right adjacent to the tracks. The tracks are built way up high on an embankment. So not much horizontal space to put a trail in these areas. And then as Phil mentioned, right near Cottage Grove and Route 218, there is the North Branch State Access Area, quite a bit of wetlands, floodplains, and surface water up there, kind of on the north branch of the Park River as it continues north. And there's a crossing there in that area as well. So lots of water up in that area. So generally speaking, we looked at three alternatives for the memo. Quite simply, it was, can we put the trail on the north or east side of the tracks, which we just called the northeast alternative? Can we put the trail on the southwest side of the tracks? And then we did look at on road and within the road right-of-way option and the implications of how that might work, costs, safety, et cetera. So that was identified as Homestead Avenue and Mark Twain Drive, so the Homestead Mark Twain alternative. So the first alternative we took a look at, locating the trail on the northeast side. Some things to note, I'll say that, this first came to us in conversations. We know that there's intense interest in redeveloping a lot of the industrial sites on Homestead Avenue. So I think this was the first question. Can we make this work? Because this would allow direct connections to those parcels. For the reasons mentioned, the adjacent buildings along Homestead being right up to the rail line, we would need about a mile, a little bit over a mile of railroad realignment within this area. So I'll show you how that looks on a section when we're and how much space we would really need to be realigning that railroad to make space for a trail. So certainly something that would be impactful and add to overall project complexity and cost. We had some standard sections, so you'll see those noted there, and you can certainly take a look through the draft report. But even when we were moving the railroad, we were asked by DOT in the guidelines from last year that the preference would be for this trail to be at least 20 feet off center from the railroad, just to give us enough horizontal clearance and not encroach upon railroad operations. I would say I think many of us agreed when we were out in the field in November, we were able to witness a railroad run. Actually, they went down, they went back, so to be able to witness that on the field was very, I think, influential and impactful on those who participated, noting the noise and everything. I think that made sense in terms of a minimum offset from the trail. Obviously, that's way more width than you actually need for horizontal clearance from the train operations. So again, indicated in the DOT guidelines is 10 to 20 feet may be allowed offset from the rail center in some cases, but we certainly want to be at least 20. So all that's to say is I did highlight areas that it could, like this railroad alignment could allow for a trail, but we'd still be under the 20-foot preferred offset. So generally speaking, that's Woodland Street to Albany Ave. As I said, that there's a lot of buildings back there, so it's just pushing that trail right next to the railroad. So this is a great example of kind of the constraints that we have out there. This is Salvation Army. I believe they have a loading dock. This is one example. I think this is one of the closer buildings to the railroad. You can clearly see that there's really no space at all to build a trail unless we're taking easement, destroying the building, or moving the railroad. So that's looking south, actually. So this cross section flips around. We're looking north. So that same building shown on the right here. So you see that, we'd be taking a look at 18-foot realignment, more or less. We show in one of the appendices, we have to chase some of the bridge clearances, horizontal clearances as well. So we're kind of limited. We can't really go much more than that because we have to chase it around the curve here to connect into some of the existing alignment. So even when we align 18 feet, when we're accounting for a 14-foot trail, which is the preference, given to us by EICL and the City of Hartford, a little bit wider trail given the more urban environment, we're 11 and a half foot offset from the rail center line. So something just to keep in mind that, you know, we don't have, even with that railroad realignment, that much horizontal clearance in this space. Just want to note this, though, the situation changes a little bit as you go further north. This is at Weber High School, so north of Plainfield Street. Generally, it's fairly similar sections. You'll notice that the right-of-way is about 80 foot, and, you know, this is typical. We have the transmission pylons on both sides of the railroad. Actually, they just got replaced. There used to be a set of three. I think there was a distribution line in here as well. They've now actually attached that to one of the pylons. So now we only have two pylons kind of think about in this area. But a lot of public right-of-way, Weber High School, some of the housing developments that we think we might be able to take advantage of. So we're showing this. This is right, just a section at the baseball field. Just an example of how we could use both of the public right-of-way on the school as well as the state right-of-way with the rail line. But you could imagine that this 14-foot trail could, if the preference was to keep this within Griffin right-of-way properly, you could still fit that between the transmission pylon and the right-of-way line. So something to think about. Things certainly open a little bit more further to the north. The second alternative we looked at was the southwest alternative. So again, simply, can we put the trail on the southwest side of the tracks? And again, going back to, I kind of think one of the main objectives of this trail is, you know, connectivity to Homestead Avenue. Clearly, this has pretty significant implications about how we think about connectivity to those parcels. So one thing I just want to highlight here is you see these kind of like little connector trails. We were thinking in this alternative as much as possible, okay, if we put this on the south side of the tracks, where are those connection opportunities? We were able to identify, especially between Albany and Garden Street connections, about every third of a mile. And we also think that there's the opportunity to do some like north side kind of spur trails to kind of connect into different parcels as well. So you'll see that there's a kind of connections at an existing at-grade crossing at Garden. The idea is to kind of bring that streetscape up to the front of Homestead. At Sigourney Street here, I will show you the concept that we had for a grade separated crossing and pedestrian bridge. So you saw that at the beginning of the section of the slide deck. We think we can do it. There's a lot of right-of-way width in that area. Actually, the city of Hartford owns property on Homestead Ave, so it gives us a landing pad to connect in a Homestead Ave. At Woodland Street, there are some kind of natural ramp connections with some City of Hartford. There's a property here on the south, the east side of Woodland Street. So connecting up to that, we can also, again, rethink the existing bridge deck. Maybe that's a streetscape opportunity, bike lanes, a bike path, whatever it might look like to get connectivity to the north side of those tracks and Homestead Avenue. And then Albany Ave, I just want to talk real quick. There's an existing side path project that the city is currently in design for, actually from Albany Ave for actually a longer extent, kind of going up here to the Y here. I think that's at Route 189, 185, and 44, one of those three. And the idea is to connect up into on the north side of Albany Ave. You can connect up to that side path, and that gives you nice east-west connectivity to all those neighborhoods there as well. Finally, we do note that there was two at-grade crossings that we could consider, although we emphasize that they're not critical for the completion of the primary alignment in this alternative. One is at Baltimore. There's a pretty big block between Woodland and Albany, and the concept is to do a pedestrian or a shared use path crossing, gates, whatever is required in that case, to get up to Homestead Ave and allow connectivity into those parcels. And then the second was identified originally by the Village at Park River redevelopment here, connection to Granby Street. Again, probably something at grade. That redevelopment had actually proposed an at grade road crossing, but something that, again, not critical for the primary alignment, but something that we wanted to make sure was on here, because it would certainly improve connectivity to those residential neighborhoods up into that area. Just want to note, this is the same chart showing again in red areas that we might be within that, like, oh, we can't make our preferred 20-foot offset. More or less, we can. There are some critical locations that we can't, that we should be aware of. 51 Homestead Avenue, the Sargent Place location, Veeder noted that there's a narrow right-of-way. Essentially, the proposal is to stay outside of the existing right-of-way and complete the trail with easement, essentially as a side path to the driveway. So while it's closer than our 20-foot, that's kind of the thought process on that, staying out of the existing fence line, more or less. And Woodland Street. So you'll see that we'll go up here to Homestead Avenue. We presented two options here, an A and a B. One that might, from available mapping, there's some floodplains, wetlands. It looks like a drainage ditch in the field. So I think that's something to take a look at further in design. So we think there's some options there. But at Woodland Street, there is Austin Organs building. Certainly, there's a kind of a pinch point. Luckily, I think the building is built on the curve of the tracks, and how the building's oriented, it's really only for maybe 100 feet or so that you really have to be that close to the tracks before you can peel it away again. So certainly much less extent that's within that 10 to 20 foot offset from the trail. So just two sections that we've drawn up, and again, a lot of this in the appendix. A typical section between Sigourney Street and Woodland Street. You'll note, actually, we have a lot of right-of-way out there, 110 feet nearly, going up to the embankment. This section looks north, so if you're familiar with this area, Sargent Street, there's a lot of multi-family residences, like right here, right outside of the right-of-way. But the concept is essentially to use that hill to our advantage. We can create additional vertical separation from the railroad, building up high, keep trail users away from the tracks, but also allows us to connect into that grade separated bridge crossing of the Griffin line. So something that we were thinking about. And then below Woodland Street, just showing the pinch point here. And you'll see it's kind of drawn a little bit weird in the section, because essentially once we're able to clear around the building, we're able to peel away from the tracks again to get under the Woodland Street Bridge. One of the things that we talked about in the field is the potential for a new culvert through the existing bridge structure. So something that we want to think about. We've noted that could be either a new culvert or might require simply a reconstruction of this bridge, which would be certainly a consideration to think about moving forward. But regardless, I think it can be done with one of those two options. Finally, I want to chat with our on-road, or I say within the road right-of-way option. You know, understanding we want to keep this a shared use path to the greatest extent possible. Looked at essentially Homestead Avenue. What's the right-of-way available to make a side path happen on the south side of the street? We anticipated incorporating the Albany Avenue side path, which is currently in design. And then to the north of Albany Avenue, use of Mark Twain Drive to Plainfield. North of Plainfield, I think the thought would be, if you want to stay outside the Griffin line, is that University of Hartford really needs to be involved to get up to Toby Road. And that would be clearly the option there once you get to that terminus at Plainfield. So generally, we had a cross-section that looked something like this. Fairly narrow right-of-way out there in some sections, especially as you go further east. So we're looking at major reconstruction to move those curb lines, narrow up that roadway to two 11-foot travel lanes, two-foot shoulders, to get space on the south side for the shared-use path. A lot of times in urban environments, we do like to separate our bike space and our pedestrian space. We did look at that. We don't really think there's a lot of space for separated facilities in that manner. I think it'll be okay. There's not a tremendous amount of pedestrian volume out there, you know, like access directly to the sidewalks that we have to worry about. A lot of that is further back in the site, so I think it's okay. But just something to note that we did take a look at it. I don't think it's really feasible. You really want that to maintain that buffer space rather than, you can imagine that 6 foot could be a concrete sidewalk, but you have a lot of hardscape out there that we'd like to avoid. So generally speaking, you know, the cost of this, take a look at that first, essentially is a streetscape project for several, I think it was 1 to 2 miles, somewhere along that range. So something that would have clear implications in terms of the cost from drainage and utilities, whatnot, a lot of traffic signals out there we got to think about as well. So while might be an option within the right of way, something to think about, that it wouldn't necessarily be any cheaper than some of the side path options that we're looking at in the Griffin line. So in terms of cost, we do have quite a bit of range on here, because understanding that there's a lot of variables and we're still just here at the very conceptual planning level. But we did take a look as a project team through what makes sense and thought this was an appropriate range. Generally speaking, because Garden Street to Plainfield Street, because we're looking at relocation of the rail line, there are impacts to transmission pylons that would have to be completed, a very complex project. Essentially, the takeaway is potentially $10 million more on an order of magnitude than the Southwest alternative. So a pretty significant project that way. Plainfield Street to Toby Road, we had in here both $4 to $6 million, more or less. That project looked more like building a standard shared use path, without impacts to the utilities, railroad, and that sort of thing. So certainly less cost. But if you look at the preferred alignment, which I'll present here in a second, you know, in the 30 to 40 million range from Garden to Toby Road is what we had at this stage. I just want to touch on this really quick, because I know I do want to open up for discussion here, and there's a lot of content, but just note that we did kind of qualitatively look at several different factors based on the key objectives of what we're trying to do out there. And, you know, that's kind of just guided our selection process as we, you know, took a look at the different options that we had available. So we can certainly circle back to that if you have more questions. I just wanted to wrap up with some of the visualizations that we've come up with to kind of help visualize this area. Essentially, the preferred alternative that we took a look at and that we recommended in the memo is to stay on the southwest side between Garden and Plainfield for the reasons mentioned. And north of Plainfield, moving over to the northeast side, there's that at-grade crossing already. We can take advantage of, there's already pedestrian accommodations. That's a fairly simple crossover to the east side of the tracks, and then running up behind Granby Street through the Weaver High School parcel and through the housing parcel here up to Toby Road. And you'll see that this connects into Bloomfield, as Phil had indicated, through Capaco. Just will note, I did mention that, you know, if we were to look at the west side, there would absolutely be impacts to the University of Hartford acquiring easements, making sure that that access could be maintained permanently in the future. This option, just we did highlight connectors down into the University of Hartford and even potentially over to some of these neighborhoods in West Hartford as well, giving them trail access directly to the system. But you could imagine, actually, that this could even be a nice loop for members of that campus. So while we maintain the alternative on the east side up there, you know, I think there's some opportunities to think about how connections might work. Just want to highlight some of the visuals that we've created. This is actually essentially a full concept with elevations in CAD that we had rendered out. This is view from Sigourney Street looking towards the northwest. So you'd have Woodland Street up at the horizon, and these properties would be kind of fronting Homestead Avenue. So the thought was that this would be your trail, your main line on the south side. So you can kind of see how the thought was to keep this high up in that right of way, noting that we do have, you know, that multifamily right up back there. We probably would be building right up to the right of way line more or less. So there, that could be a consideration, but to keep ourselves high enough from the railroad and give ourselves clearance to make this crossing, that would be certainly something that we would need. Looking at a pedestrian bridge or trail bridge across the railroad and then kind of connecting in here, there's like a little almost alleyway of sorts that would connect to Homestead Ave. This, we had a conversation with the city, you know, obviously noting that development is certainly a key desire in this corridor, and the corner parcel is a key component of that, you know, just showing potential development in this area, how it could work with the trail. And then potentially, again, a north side connector trail could kind of grab some of those other properties further towards downtown and just provide access to the main line of that trail if desired. We did note in the memo that, you know, we know that there's a lot of conversation about future uses of this corridor, and we just wanted to make sure that was compatible with those future uses. So whether it be bus rapid transit, you'll see that, you know, essentially converting that area that was previously occupied by the rail right of way to bus rapid transit. We think that's certainly compatible. And then even if this even if the railroad was to be removed and you want to think about this as more kind of a linear park concept, also compatible, you know, essentially, I think we thought as a team, you might really want to have that 14-foot trail for your multimodal movements, but certainly within the other 110-foot right of way, you probably want some other areas to do pedestrian trails, narrow trails, that sort of thing. So we think that's compatible as well. Another view just from the north side, looking at the pedestrian bridge, and that would be the south side trail elevation. You see it certainly needing some retaining structures as well. And just a note, you know, this is looking at under Sigourney Street Bridge. So we do have the big constraint really in designing this whole thing conceptually was looking at maintaining vertical clearance under Sigourney Street Bridge and then climbing at an ADA grade, acceptable grade, to a location we could meet vertical clearance over the railroad. So something that we did take a look at in the planning level as well. And this is just a photo rendering further to the west at Woodland Street. This is the Austin Organs Complex. So again, you can kind of see how that corner is the biggest constraint here. But once you get past that corner, it opens up. You can kind of follow that building facade out further to the you know, the preferred offset before you cross under Woodland Street. And what's shown here is potentially a proposed culvert. Just want to finally kind of wrap up with how the memo discusses fencing. I think we're pretty clear and just kind of forthcoming in this, and that this is what was given to us by DOT in 2023. Essentially, it lays out two criteria, right? 20-foot setback. If we can maintain a 20-foot setback, go install a 7-foot fence. And if anywhere between a 10 to 20-foot setback, the call out here is to do a solid non-scalable barrier. So something that we just really want to have a conversation about. We've done research on other case studies, not something that we've seen typical from other agencies. We've noted that this is not a federal standard. We've looked through the Federal Railroad Administration Railroad Trail Design Guide, and not something that has been echoed in that guidelines as well. So something that we want to reconsider. I just want to highlight this this quote from the Federal Railroad Administration Guide, which just essentially talks about fencing and the need to think about other factors such as visibility, and especially in areas that where this could potentially, if you're doing barriers, solid structures such as that, could really make this this facility isolated from public view, especially in areas where perceived or actual levels of crime are high. And just notes that fence design in these instances should not block visual access to trail corridors, a shorter height, or transparent fencing style such as a chain link may be appropriate in these areas. This is a call out from the guide. And I just also want to recognize, you saw a lot of elements with elevation, with landscaping, even up further north, the transmission pylons, that sort of thing. Just recognizing the guide does recognize vegetation, drainage ditches, and or vertical separation where trails are 10 feet or more higher than adjacent rail lines. Obviously, all these elements should be considered because they're all working to reduce the concern for trespassing on the rail line, and should similarly be considered when thinking about fencing in a corridor. I just want to wrap up. Obviously, it's just shown you a lot of visual technical products. We do have a conceptual plan in the appendix there with call outs with, you know, how this thing could work, just at a plan, a schematic level as well. Yeah, I know there's a lot of information. I just do want to spend a few minutes talking about how this relates to the general Hartford Bloomfield gap as well, and talk about kind of where we landed in the screening results. Just to back up, I've mentioned this many times already. We had the assumption going into this Griffin Line technical analysis that for the Hartford to Bloomfield gap, we were going to accept the short list to include the best, whatever the best Griffin Line option was, with the next best alternative. Okay, so we were taking a look at those. Trying to find two shortlisted alternatives. So just want to highlight, this is where we landed with the screening analysis. Our central alignments are those that more or less use Griffin Line in any sort of way. And you'll see that, you know, 120 points, 125 points here. These were by far outperforming a lot of the other areas that we were taking a look at in several of the criteria. So I think that was pretty clear from the screening analysis. One thing I do want to highlight, though, is that this option actually scored, this is kind of going up from Griffin Line through Keeney Park and then actually back around. Clearly an option and an alignment that adds a lot of extra miles to a total route, but something that actually was getting more points and something that I think something I think we should consider, you know, through this report is how this connection might be identified. Potentially, this might not be a main line for the East Coast Greenway, but might be an important connection to continue to pursue, much in the same way that that Rockwall connection in Bloomfield is important for the town of Bloomfield, regardless of the East Coast Greenway. So something that really could be important. And you'll notice even the equity score here, just because of some of the adjacent neighborhoods, you'll see that's 25 points out of 30 where that was kind of scoring well. The other two highest scoring options that did not use the Griffin Line, it's kind of surprising to me, and this is a point of discussion that we'll need to have as a group. We had this option, which essentially tried to follow the existing East Coast Greenway alignment that goes through the west end of Hartford. Not surprisingly, there's not many corridors that we could do an exclusive trail. We did look at the Park River corridor, but we noted that there's a National Park Service report. South of Asylum, there's not really great options in that corridor. So this looked like essentially a really urban facility, a shared use path or like a cycle track in this space that uses Farmington Ave, West Boulevard, Prospect Avenue, and Scarborough. Like all those facilities are fairly wide and kind of like it probably be a streetscaping or go put bollards and do a two-way cycle track sort of thing. But fairly long. connects to a lot of destinations there. So something to think about. And then the other option was to utilize the existing or the trail that's underway that connects up to the new Windsor Town Line. That'll be the new Riverfront Recapture Park. And then over to Route 218, as Phil described, kind of through Keeney Park. Clearly, you'll see down here, the cost score, it scores well in cost because a lot of this is already getting constructed in a current project. So there's not a lot of new trail that would need to be built to kind of complete this alignment. But, you know, key considerations here, it's not connecting to a whole lot in terms of Hartford. So you see it has some of the lowest scores for connectivity, for equity, for environment. It's going through a floodplain regularly. It will flood out, so it will be closed weeks out of the year. We did have some personal security metrics in here that was primarily about egress, like egress into the trail. This will be, you know, once you're on this trail section, it's several miles long, there's not really any clear way out of that trail. So something to consider when we're comparing those two alignments. Finally, want to wrap up about kind of where we initially landed on downtown routing. We had two options. The first option being the Founders Bridge here connects through the Travelers Plaza and into Bushnell Park before it currently goes down Capitol Ave. But the thought was, instead of there going that way, could we kind of come up past the Union Station and then up to the Griffin Line? And the second option under consideration would be to go down to the Riverfront Trail and then loop back to the Boathouse up over I-91 with the new river link that IQLT's pursuing, and then kind of some within the roadway right-of-way trail options through past Dunkin' Donuts Park and all that. So this is where the screening analysis landed, and I'll just tell you how it works, and then again, another point for consideration discussion. Essentially, this was the highest performing alternative. And I think, you know, when we take a look through the options, more or less, a lot of this is built. There's the Bushnell Park, clearly a destination of the state, you know, state capital. We had some measures in here for transit. The bus hub for the region is right in this area. So certainly something to consider. Major destinations, employment centers, whatnot. I think there might be an opportunity for an improved connection between Main Street and Travelers Plaza and Anthony M. Square. I think that's privately held, but maybe something that can be identified. That's currently a four-lane section of that little roadway there. And then on the west side, how we're thinking about that, it's essentially along Spruce Street up the hill to get to Griffin Line. So I'll show you that in 1 second, because there are some impacts that we might want to think that way. Conversely, the other option here, just noted, you know, there are some considerations to think about. There is a staircase to get down to the river. There is an elevator sometimes that's open, but certainly something that we've heard about that we want to be cognizant of. Under the Buckley Bridge specifically, that section of trail is very prone to flooding. So that could be closed weeks out of the year, even in the summertime. It's essentially just a longer route, requires that new bridge, you know, would be that Riverlink Bridge, certainly major infrastructure and a trail adjacent to the roadway. We did have points in here to prefer a trail that was further separated from busy roadways for obvious reasons. So with all that said, we did land on in the screening analysis on a preferred alignment here to the south, but, you know, something that we can talk about. I just want to wrap up that I think both of these connections are valid. We've talked long about having, you know, there's could be connections that we identify that aren't necessarily the primary route, but that connect to key pieces. And I think an exciting opportunity for this, if both of these routes were to be built, that's a wonderful loop trail in the future and amenity for any residents, you know, visitors downtown, whatnot, or any of the adjacent areas. So, something to consider. And then finally, just want to talk a little bit about Spruce Street. I have this routed right now. A lot of these streets to get up to this Garden Street, the Griffin Line, Spring Street, fairly narrow in this area, these little north-south streets. The thought is to have a shared use path in kind of with reconfiguration of the parking lot. You know, just wanted to note and be very clear that Spruce Street itself within the right of way probably cannot support a shared facility. There's a lot of activity with the train station, so we probably be having to take land from that parking lot. It is a DOT owned parking lot. I think it's leased to the Greater Hartford Transit District, something that we should talk about. And it probably wouldn't be a major reconfiguration to allow space, but something that could be a potential. And just note that, you know, I think currently the only drop-off pickup spaces in this area, there's like five spaces before that crosswalk. And this gets incredibly congested when trains coming in and out, especially at holiday times. It could be an opportunity to have a short-term project to totally reimagine circulation in this area as well. You know, understanding that in Greater Hartford Mobility Study might be coming down some point in the future, trying to be compatible with that as well. So just quick note on that. You know, if this were to come to fruition, you know, the goal here, they see Griffin Rail with Trail noted from Greater Hartford Mobility Study. I-84 essentially becomes a multimodal boulevard that would carry fast track, that could have space for a trail. You could imagine a very easy connection in that right of way from Griffin Line to the riverfront. At that point, you know, we could incorporate from the plaza, you know, what is anticipated to be a trail outside of the floodplain, no stairs connection to the Buckley Bridge. And then that would, you know, you'd have an easy connection over to Griffin Line. So that might make sense in the long term. Anyway, I will pause it. There's an incredible amount of information and I will open it up for the group. And I do have a few slides to close out, but let's stop there. Kyle.
Parker, it's Kyle from DOT Officer Rail. I just want to clarify that the Rail with Trail guide you're referring to from the FRA is not a set of standards or specifications, just a report on like what other jurisdictions have done and what they found to be the best practices thus far.
Correct.
Just wanted to clarify that for everybody, but nice work. Thank you.
Kevin.
Hi, yes, excellent analysis and presentation. I guess the one question I have, just seeing the alternatives to having a train line in place of the Griffin Line, and obviously you talk about a fast track type bus line, but then you talk about what if it were abandoned completely. If a decision were made to not have to eliminate that rail line, what would be the implications at this point in time before building anything? Would the study continue? Would the study just, you know, at all points in the Griffin Line, just consider building the rail trail on the Griffin Line? And what are the cost implications of that? Thanks.
Sure. I think generally you'll note that a lot of there were some major elements in there for infrastructure to do rail trail. So I think you can imagine that those could be removed if that were to move forward. You know, obviously we would need to do the new culverts, the new bridges across the rail line, that sort of thing. I think there needs to be a really very real conversation that decision to abandon the railroad is one that is legally required to go through a federal process, regardless of what the state would prefer. And that might have very real impacts on the timeline for when a trail could be built, even if kind of that was the direction that the agency would want to move in. So that was our scope was essentially just to figure out rail with trail. We do have an appendix just that essentially states that's a federal process that has to go through the Surface Transportation Board at the federal level. And that's kind of there's EIS language in there, there's environmental assessment. I mean, these processes can take years to complete, even if everyone's on board. I'll also defer to the either DOT or Bruce, because Bruce, I know you got some experience down in Jersey as well that you might want to speak to.
Yeah, so the Griffin Line, good Lord. The Essex-Hudson Connector between Jersey City and Newark. It actually goes from Jersey City to the middle of Montclair, New Jersey, 11 and a half miles. That process of getting it finally abandoned and sold, as it turns out, to the state of New Jersey, but abandoned through the Surface Transportation Board, is in fact still going on 8 years later, just so you're aware. It's a very, very time-consuming process.
Yeah, Parker, just to piggyback on that, Griffin Line isn't going to be incredibly hard to abandon, especially considering that it is currently active and possibly growing. It's not something that's dying currently. It's going to be a very long process, to put it nicely, if that were. I'm just saying it's not something you'd probably want to wait for.
Thank you.
Parker, just on that point real quick, do we know what the estimate might be for the process of relocating the rail?
Yeah, so another conversation, I think, especially for your group, Kyle, if you look through the appendix information, I put a placeholder in. There's two major elements that need to happen if we want to relocate. First of all, there's a project complexity and time consideration, right? You got to shut the whole thing down, do this whole railroad business first, and then you can start your trail stuff. The two components, though, were the railroad itself, and then there was actually also Eversource transmission pylon impacts. There are two pylons in the way as we approach the Albany Avenue bridge. So those are high voltage transmission lines that also have to get relocated. Again, maybe not something that's impossible, but certainly would add to, in our view, to the project complexity. So in terms of cost, something that we can further refine, but as a placeholder, we put $10 million in that cost to allow for all this stuff to happen within that mile and a half or so with the rail closure that needs to happen, et cetera. So I highlighted that in red. That's a call out for DOT, but I'm certainly happy to further refine that based on kind of DOT's experience.
Yeah, it's something we could probably look into and discuss. I don't have it off the top of my head what it would probably come out to. Eversource, you're probably looking at $1 million at least to do two poles. So yeah, 10 doesn't sound that crazy to me, what it would cost all in, but I can get back to you with a more serious answer.
Awesome, thank you. I think the takeaway too, just in terms of, you know, with the thoughts to get this thing built, it, any additional complexity is probably years on a project, in my view, at this point.
Yeah, Eversource specifically, you'd probably have to wait for an outage, like a planned outage, to get the work done, which you'd be deferring to them, and it would go on their schedule. So.
Becky.
Yes, just to piggyback off of that conversation right there, I think it would be pretty easy to get costs as far as how much it would cost to move the pylons from Eversource, since they just replaced them all along this corridor within the last 2 to 3 years. So I think they would have some decent cost estimates to be able to do that, because they just did it. The other thing that I wanted to ask you, Parker, as far as I know we were going through the slides pretty quickly and stuff like that, but the economic development opportunity specifically along, Garden to Albany Avenue or Route 44, how much did you guys look at the opportunities along this corridor for economic development?
Yeah. So we've had our economic, like their specialty e-consult solutions, right? So we've had several conversations with them along the way. Quite frankly, you'll see this in the memo. It landed on a qualitative analysis, not a quantitative one, because of the such minute differences in shifting a trail 50 feet south with connections a third of the mile versus along the trail. So in their view, had very limited impact on any potential development, especially because we were already kind of baked in as many of those connections as possible. So that's kind of written up in the memos provided from them.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
I have some more comments I can submit in writing, and I need to discuss with iQuilt first. But I think my main comment for now is, as the report is being finalized, just as far as the cost estimates, any revisiting of that possible, just to make sure that all of the constraints identified are fully accounted for, all of the site preparation, easement acquisition, just everything in the report is fully reflected in the final totals.
Sure. We'll take another look. And, you know, just to reiterate, I think at a plan, very high planning level, it's impossible to know. You know, one thing that I think was discussed in the site visits, like even contamination in these corridors could be something considered, and not something that I think is possible to know at a planning level point of view until that goes further in design. But we'll take another review through it, and especially, you know, coordinate with DOT on that rail realignment number if there's any refinement that they want to add to that.
And then the other thing, just going back to the discussion about time estimates, you know, not wanting to add or go beyond your scope, but where possible, adding estimates for the expected length of, you know, environmental permitting or just any of the other steps that would be necessary, especially relative to other alternatives.
Sure.
Thank you.
The other thing I'll add too, we, you know, so the folks from DOT, we do have a meeting here scheduled in the next week or so. And if there's any organization, you know, here that wants to have a one-on-one chat, we're more than happy to do so. Jackie.
Yeah, Parker, thank you. I just wanted to just ask what the timeline is from here out, like when you're hoping to have that final, just so we know what the next steps. I know you showed the timeline in the beginning.
Barring any major concerns, our hope is to wrap up this draft in March. You'll see that there were some placeholders for, you know, some agency input, et cetera. So unless we totally struck out, I think that's the hope.
Thank you.
I am curious if there's and maybe again something we have to wrap up with, the kind of circle back with the city off the Griffin line. My thought in terms of the next best alternative for the short list was the riverfront trail, just because that seems so much more attainable in terms of the cost, a lot of this getting built. I don't know if there's any kind of quick reactions to that, if you need more time to kind of think about what then that next best alternative that we should identify is. Bruce.
I was muted there. Yeah, I mean, cost is a concern for sure. I think that, you know, that certainly would be, you know, our thought would be to look at that alignment in terms of cost, in terms of short-term buildability, feasibility. You know, it does look good from that you know, way of looking at things. The other thing is that, you know, as a major capital project, you know, the Griffin line at, you know, by the time it finally gets built, you know, let's call it, you know, 45 million or 50 million, it's a big chunk of money for a capital project. And I'm not thinking so much of political considerations. I'm thinking more about, you know, how it looks to the general community. And that's a big number. I suspect that we might have some issues there, depending on, you know, where we can find funding, you know, where those funding sources come from, and some community engagement regarding the cost. That those are my only issues, I think.
Yep.
Okay. Any other comments, Kevin?
Sort of a follow-up to, I think, what the last couple of people have asked in different ways. Given if we use the alternative Griffin Line trail that you're proposing, what's the build-out time on that? When would you expect it to be done? And given that Riverfront Recapture, some of that trail is already built, some of it is in progress, when would we expect that to be done? In other words, given sort of the Griffin Line alternative and what I think is being discussed as the next best alternative, what are the completion times on each of them besides the cost? Thanks.
Yeah, Mike, from Riverfront Recapture, do you know when the Riverfront Trail is slated for completion? 2025, no?
Sure. So we're looking at... obviously, the planning and permitting needs to continue over the course of the next year plus or so. But so in partnership with the city, we're hopeful they get this, the Hartford to Windsor Riverwalk section done in the next 18 months to 2 years. It's a lot of load spend on DEP permits, Army Corps of Engineer permits, et cetera. And I mean, it's frustrating for the city and Riverfront, but we're trying to continue to push as quickly as we can because we know it's a... It's going to be a popular destination. Mark, you got anything to share on that one? Or Owen?
Yeah, I'll just add that, you know, Mike's spot on. You know, we have a lot of things that are outside of our control. The Army Corps and DEP regulatory processes are pretty complex and involved. And, you know, there's timing of things. We have to do another natural diversity database study as part of the state project piece 63721. And that won't start until the spring. A lot of things outside of our control. I think it's optimistic to think that sometime in 25 or perhaps early 26, it would be done. But the important part thing is that it will be built.
Great. Thank you. I think Kevin, too, just to add on the point, I think the clear advantages you're noting from the northern side, there's a lot of from Bloomfield even to get over to Rockwell. We know that's been in queue for grants from Riverfront Recapture side to get up to Windsor. That's in queue. So the piece that would really need to be moving forward is starting to shorten. Costs are starting to shorten, kind of fit within, you know, some more standard grant applications. I think it's too hard to tell what at this point in terms of phasing, like when the actual completion would be done, because I think with these big number, I mean, if they got to Bruce's point, if Griffin Line got a $50 million allocation from an earmark or what have you, you know, that would certainly change the game versus, you know, having to phase out a mile at a time to complete within the existing kind of LOTSIP or trails rec grant, whatever the case may be. So I think it's too hard, too early to tell at this point when the completion date would be, but just some considerations.
Yeah, I would just add, you know, a funding source, a RAISE grant, or, you know, some sort of larger federal program, that would change the game. That would be, that would change the timeline substantially, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, if that whole thing could get built in one phase, that would be, I think, incredible. So.
Jonathan TC, I guess the only thing I would say with respect to that, and something to keep in mind, and I know there's a lot of other considerations there, but if the town were to get the lots of funding for Rockwell, and you know the Hartford has its riverfront going, when you start looking at some, you know, beyond maybe a directly from Congress, but like RAISE grants or some of those other grants, suddenly you are closing a gap by going that eastern route up the river and north route, I guess, in Hartford across, you're closing a gap. So that a shorter gap, that may be a, you know, something that's a bigger selling point.
Yep. Any other points before I got a few wrap up slides, but that's pretty much the bulk of the content for today. Thanks, Phil. Okay. And I'm available after 12:32 if you want to stay on for more direct comments. So just really wanted to kind of hit this home. I think you start seeing a lot of the kind of cost estimates here. And just from our early status, where things stand, town by town, Simsbury is about 1.7 miles of new trail. That estimate in that report is 13.1 million. The cost that we had for Bloomfield, about 6 miles of trail, about 17.5 million. You saw Griffin Line at that 30, somewhere in that 30 range on that preferred alternative. That's only Toby Road down to Garden Street. We do have a section that's not included, about 0.4 miles from Garden Street to Bushnell Park, but not terribly too long. And 2 miles of trail in East Hartford at 13.3 million, quite a bit of structure in that gap as well. So when all of a sudden told the program, you know, for the whole project, you're in the $70 to $80 million range for a total length of new trail, about 13 miles. You know, that's assuming the Griffin Line's kind of moving forward in that cost range, but not yet including that Garden Street to Bushnell Park piece. So that will add a little bit as well. So all told, I think that comes out to about $6 million. A mile, more or less. So, Bruce, I know you always have your thumb on that figure. So, something that's, you know, certainly not the easiest part of trail that we're looking at, but not something, probably not the hardest either. I know down in New Haven, you got a higher rate. So, just kind of wanted to put this as a status.
Well, you know, that little piece of New Haven that is getting wrapped up, which is mostly tunnel, by the way, but that's about $11 million a mile, just to give you an idea. The national, now I should say the East Coast average, because I don't follow all of the national numbers, but the average currently has steadily gone up for a mile of trail without much of any engineered structures is about 1.75 million to build a mile of trail right now. And it does vary, but that's a pretty common number these days. So that's the kind of the base number.
Yeah, certainly we're a lot of difficult miles here that we gotta cover. So.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. No, this is not that. This is that we know that. Yeah.
And then finally, I just want to wrap up on next steps. So in March, it's fast approaching. Newsletters you can expect. So if there's any final comments, concerns, you know, as we wrap up this memo, I think there's a lot of information that we got to kind of push out into the community. We do have pop-up meetings. I indicated that I think our initial thought was, especially around that Griffin Line, where there's, you know, there's houses right up against this corridor, that would be some key stakeholders that we would want to engage with the pop-up meeting. I put here as a tentative date. If we can do it, it would be great to get in a draft final report by mid-April, all things considered with the Griffin line. I think we tackled a lot of the very complex part of the study area. And then I have in here as a tentative date, April 27th as the final committee meeting. That would set us up for public meetings following our final committee meeting and then municipal meetings in May to wrap this up and then getting all the approvals from CROG and whatnot. So that's where that timeline comes from. It's certainly ambitious, but please, if you have any concerns from any of the agencies, speak now. As we move forward, we can certainly take meetings one-on-one. I know DOT, we have a meeting specifically with your group, so please don't hesitate to reach out. I do have to stop for a minute and just open it up for the floor if there's any public comment to be had for 30 seconds. Okay. As always, thank you so much. Here's my contact information. Please feel free to reach out if you have any questions. And thank you once again. If you want to stay on the phone and you have any more direct questions, I will stick around for a few minutes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Just want to say nice work, Parker. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Let's go.